Blog Talk Radio.
Conservative, or should I say the visible conservative, Christians Unleashed on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Thomas. And today, because I have prior engagements, I am doing a special one-hour show at 1:30 today. And I am going to talk about abortion in the black community, the forced sterilization of men, women, and children. So stay tuned to this episode a visible conservative, Christians Unleashed on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, welcome to this episode of Visible Conservative Christians Unleashed on Blog Talk Radio. And once again, I'm your host, Thomas, and I want to thank everybody for joining me today. And for those who are listening in archives, that's fine too. Anyway, we are going to talk about a very controversial issue in light of the defeat of the Life from Conception Bill to talk about abortion. We look at abortion as a social issues, and we want to focus on just fiscal issues. Well, I have a problem with that. Oh, man. Dear Heavenly Father, in the mighty name of Jesus Christ, thank you for your grace, mercy, and your love. But I would like your words of wisdom, your guidance on how to speak what I'm supposed to speak. Father, I lift you up. I give you glory, I give you honor, and I give you praise. In the mighty name of Jesus Christ. Amen. Romans 5:8 says, God commended his love towards us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. And there is no fear in love, because perfect love casts out all fear. God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power, love, and a sound mind. It is the love of God that leads one to repentance. And the love of God covers a multitude of sins. Today, I'm going to go back to a topic that I talked about earlier. Earlier on in my shows. Abortion in the black community. I'm going to quote someone. At the time Roe was decided, Roe being Roe versus Wade, at the time Roe was decided, there was concern about population growth, and particularly growth in populations that we didn't want to have too many of. New York Times Magazine, Place of Women on the Court, July 7, 2009. That was Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. You know what? There was recently a story that came out and these were women were victims of forced sterilization. though primarily associated with Nazi Germany, North Korea, and other oppressive regimes, U.S. forced sterilization laws fit perfectly with the eugenic culture of early 20th century America. In 1849, Gordon Lincecum, a famed Texas biologist and physician, proposes a bill mandating the eugenic sterilization of the mentally handicapped and others whose genes he deems undesirable. Although the legislation is never sponsored or brought up for a vote, it represents the first serious attempt in U.S. history to use forced sterilization for eugenics purposes. In 1897, Michigan state legislature became the first in the country to pass a forced sterilization law, but it is vetoed by the governor. In 1901, legislators in Pennsylvania attempt to pass a eugenic forced sterilization law, but it stalls. In 1907, Indiana becomes the first state in the country to successfully pass a mandatory forced sterilization law. In this case, impacting the feeble-minded, mentally handicapped. 1909, California and Washington passed mandatory sterilization laws. 1922, Harry Hamilton Laughlin, director of the Eugenics Research Office, proposes a federal mandatory sterilization law. Like Lincecum's proposal, it never really goes anywhere. 1927, in Buck versus Bell, the U.S. Supreme Court rules 8-1 that laws mandating the sterilization of the mentally handicapped do not violate the Constitution. Writing for the majority, Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes makes an explicitly eugenic argument. It is better for all the world if instead of waiting to execute degenerate offspring for crime or to let them starve for their imbecility, society can prevent those who are manifestly unfit from continuing their kind. Wow. Nazi propaganda Hey, Tesler, welcome to the show. Nazi propaganda defends Germany's forced sterilization program by citing the United States as an ally in the eugenic movement and its laws as proof of its status as sane. World War II and the atrocities committed by the Nazi government would rapidly change U.S. attitudes towards eugenics. In 1942, in Skinner versus Oklahoma, the U.S. Supreme Court rules unanimously against an Oklahoma law targeting some felons for sterilization. The plaintiff, Jack Skinner, was a chicken thief while excluding white-collar criminals. The majority opinion, written by Justice William O. Douglas, rejects the broad eugenic mandate previously outlined in Buck versus Bell in 1927. Strict scrutiny of the classification which a state makes in a sterilization law is essential, lest unwittingly or otherwise individuals invidious discriminations are made against groups or types of individuals in violation of the constitutional guarantee of just and equal laws. 1970, the Nixon administration dramatically increases Medicaid-funded sterilizations of low-income Americans, primarily Americans of color. While these sterilizations are voluntary as a matter of policy, anecdotal evidence later suggests that they are often involuntary as a matter of practice, as patients are often misinformed or left uninformed regarding the nature of the procedures that they have agreed to undergo. In 1979, a survey conducted by Family Planning Perspectives finds that approximately 70% of American hospitals fail to adequately follow U.S. Department of Health and Human Services guidelines regarding informed consent in cases of sterilization. In 1981, Oregon performs the last legal forced sterilization in U.S. history. This hits home for me, guys, and I'm going to tell you why. I was 6 months old when I was taken away from my mom. And I was sterilized as a baby because I was sick. So therefore, unfortunately, I will never have children unless I adopt. But now, I'm going to educate conservatives. I'm going to educate pro-life people, point blank. Point blank. Point blank. I am looking something up. I'm about to read to you something that is known as the Negro Project. The Negro Project was initiated in 1939 by Margaret Sanger, founder of Planned Parenthood. It was a collaborative effort between the American Birth Control League and Sanger's Birth Control Clinical Research Bureau. For a eugenist, it wasn't controversial. It was integral to the implementation of practice of selective breeding applied to humans with the aim of improving the species. Negative eugenics focused on preventing the birth of those it considered inferior or unfit. This was the foundation of Sanger's birth control policy and advocated throughout her writings, speeches, and her periodicals, including Pivot of Civilization, Plan for Peace, and countless birth control review articles. The pseudoscience racial hygiene theory of negative eugenics influenced social policy and eugenics-based legislation, Immigration Act of 1924, segregation laws, sterilization laws, and led to the racial hygiene theory adopted by the Nazis. Noted eugenist Eugene Fisher, who was funded by the Rockefeller Foundation, one of many same organizations that also financially supported Sanger's work, were responsible for the Nazi adoption of racial hygiene theory at the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute that led to the eugenics implementation of the Holocaust. The connection between American eugenics and the horrors of Nazi Germany are irrefutable. The preponderance of evidence of where Sanger wanted to go, although she decried the atrocities of the Holocaust after World War II, shows the ignorance and negativity of eugenics philosophy and its eventual conclusions left undeterred. The Negro Project was but a precursor to what eugenics wanted to implement on a much larger scale. The main objective of the proposed Population Congress is to apply a stern and rigid policy of sterilization and segregation to that grade of population whose progeny is already tainted or whose inheritance is such that objectionable traits may be transmitted to offspring. That was Margaret Sanger's Plan for Peace 1932 Senate hearing. This is the same Sanger who persuaded a few reluctant yet incredibly influential black ministers to join in her birth control movement, to dispel the rising doubts among those who objected to birth control on religious and moral grounds. Sanger wrote that the minister's work is also important, offering to train him in their ideas because, and I quote, "We do not want word to go out that we want to exterminate the Negro population. And the minister is the man who can straighten out that idea if it ever occurs to any of their more rebellious members." Many use this statement to bolster the claim that Sanger wanted to exterminate all of the black population. But this statement is about reducing a certain type of black individual that Sanger believes should be eliminated, sterilized, or segregated onto farms. Those who are poor and supposedly less intelligent, eugenists believed that the entirety of the black population were intellectually and racially inferior. Sanger's ideological agreement and written spoken solidarity with the eugenics movement does throw legitimate doubt on whether it was only a segment of the black population that was being targeted. With the help of elite and famous African Americans, Mary McLeod Bethune, W.E.B. Du Bois, and Reverend Adam Clayton Powell Sr., the Negro Project was able to be sold as a solution to poverty and high birth rates. It is crucial, however, to understand this endeavor in conjunction with Sanger's dominant efforts of eliminating the unfit in her hatred of charitable organizations. She devotes an entire chapter on charities and how those who finance them are dropping millions into Rosewater philanthropies and charities that are silly at best and vicious at worst. Organized charity itself is the symptom of a malignant social disease instead of decreasing and aiming to eliminate the stocks of people that are most detrimental to the future of the race and the world. It tends to render them to a menacing degree dominant. Black children are an endangered species. Here's a simple truth. The intent of Sanger's Negro Project is firmly intact. Nearly 40% of all African American pregnancies end in induced abortion. This is by design. Abortions kill more black people than the seven leading causes of death combined: heart disease, cancer, strokes, accidents, diabetes, homicide, and chronic lower respiratory diseases, according to CDC data. The African American rate is 3x, three times to five times that of the white population, and over two times that of all other races combined. This is a crisis situation. The media has been mostly silent. Our churches are mostly silent. But the truth screams loud and clear. Under the false liberty of reproductive freedom, we are killing our very future. I am sure, I know Tesla's in the chat room. I don't know if anyone else has come into the room, because I'm not even checking the chat room. Yes. But I decided to do this show because of the defeat of the bill in Mississippi. The Life Begins at Birth bill. I just call it the Life Begins at Birth. It went down. And then on the news, I heard them make a comment that it just goes to show that we shouldn't have social conservatism, social issues as part of the campaign. Let me tell you something. I don't care who it offends. Abortion is the most racially diabolical and most evil practice in the history of this nation. And you know what? I'm a lay it down and I'm a speak where it came from. Democrats, liberals. Margaret Sanger was a socialist. The predecessor to the modern day liberal. I'm sick and tired of the excuse, well, abortion should be kept legal in the case of rape and incest or to save a mother's life. Folks, let me break it down to you. Let me educate you a little bit. Abortions for cases of rape and incest make up 1% of all the abortions performed. abortions to save a mom's life? Folks, what do you think that make up? I'd say 1% actually, so a total of 2%. A total of 2%. The other 98% of abortions performed in this country are for reasons of birth control. Reasons of birth control. Reasons of birth control. But yet, oh, we shouldn't make social issues. We shouldn't make issues like that. We shouldn't make it an issue, they say. Why wouldn't I make it an issue? When it's destroying my community. Maybe the rest of America doesn't care. I know the left doesn't. They think, okay, well, if we can kill all the black people, maybe they won't become conservative if they catch on to what we're really doing. This isn't a subject that most like to hear. I don't know if my guest left because he or she was offended or what. But as a conservative who happens to be black, regardless of the fact that my community votes for the Democrats at a 96% clip, or more, when I see something that is destroying my community, I'm going to say something about it, regardless of the fact that they may hate me, may think I'm an Uncle Tom, a sellout. You know what, folks? I don't really care what they think about that. What are we going to do? Most of America does not even have a clue of the racist history of abortion. Folks, abortion's purpose was to destroy the black community. So as a black man, what am I just supposed to do? Sit back and keep my mouth shut? Hey, I was already surgically sterilized as a baby. So if I want children, I have to adopt or meet a nice woman who already have kids. And I'm open to that. But meanwhile, I will never get to leave a legacy because my legacy was destroyed when whoever made the decision to surgically sterilize me at the age of 6 months old. That's a call-in number. You're on the air with Visible Conservative. What can I do for you?
Invisible Conservative, eh?
That's my name.
It's kind of like me. I'm ex-hyphenated American.
How are you tonight?
Doing pretty good, actually. There's not very many people that I come across that will express the same feelings that I have on abortion. And it seems like you're pretty passionate about it, and more than that, you're very, very, very correct on the purpose of abortion. And the reason abortion was and has been marketed in America so long and so greatly,
right?
And now it's been embraced by what I call and others call the neo-feminists, because the feminists of olden days they did not support abortion. Like the Katie B. Stanton and the Susan B. Anthony's and all those ladies of the late 1800s and the early 1900s, they didn't promote that. They didn't believe in it. It's the new feminist ideology that is being promoted that really has embraced abortion, and to the point of actually sacrificing a whole demographic in our population, mainly the African American community. 14 million African Americans have been aborted since 1973. Our population is only 36 million people. Now, to bring that into perspective of what's going on in 2000, I'll just use last year's figures. Of all abortions committed abortions committed, you guys get the picture. On women last year, 37% of those abortions were performed on African American females.
Right.
Okay. That's 37% of all abortions last year on African American females, who make up 7% of the population.
Right.
With an abortion rate like that, there is no way a population can recover. The African American community, the growth rate, or versus the death rate versus the birth rate, is at 0.7 to 1. For every black person that's born, 0.7, a black person that dies, 0.7 is being born. And I just kind of scratched my head because, you know, I don't know at what point that our so-called leaders of Black America decided that they were going to sell us out. I don't know if it was W.B. Du Bois with his socialist ideology or in the 60s. But I do know this: the African American community in America has been the subject of the grand socialist experiment in America.
Right.
If you want to see what socialism looks like in this country, all you have to do is look at the control group, and that's the African American community. Everything that can be done has been done to them. To, number one, to destroy the family. A lot of folks say, well, that came out of slavery. Well, there's other individuals around the world and in this country that have been enslaved and have recovered a heck of a lot quicker than the African American community has done. But the grand experiment was to introduce socialism into the Black community. And one of the biggest proponents of that was an academia, W.E.B.
Right.
Du Bois. There was a great debate between W.E.B. Du Bois and Booker T. Washington. Folks, don't even pay attention to it. Booker T. Washington said that the Black man should and needs to get himself a trade, learn how to do that trade, be a working, productive person in society. W.E.B. Du Bois says, no, we need to seek equality through education and equality through the academia, through academics, and so on and so forth. But what that did was that said that, okay, working hard and being, you know, a productive member of society is not that important. But what you need to do is be smart, and they will accept you. Well,
right.
Being smart and not having a trade is not a good thing.
Right.
So I just kind of look back and I'm saying, it's very confusing. It's very disturbing. And when you've got individuals out there that do not walk lockstep with those, with the masses, the first thing that they're called is Uncle Tom or sellout or,
right.
or chocolate cover or ex-hyphenated American or invisible conservative.
Right.
You know?
Well, you know, I changed my name. The official name of the show is Visible Conservative Christian Unleashed. But when I first started the show, I called it Invisible Conservatives by virtue of the fact that liberals look at conservatives who are Black as token conservatives.
There you go.
As they say, sucking on the teat of the Republican Party. Well, first of all, I'm a conservative, not a Republican. I'm not a Republican because the Republican walked away from their roots. As you probably know, the Republican Party was founded in opposition to slavery. So to me, that was noble. But now you have idiots like Karl Rove saying stuff like, well, the fourth accuser appeared with Gloria Allred, so that must mean that there are some credibilities to her accusations. Excuse me?
Oh, Allred is an ambulance station. She would sue her mama if she knew she'd get some money.
Exactly. Exactly. And you know what? I did this show on abortion today because of the defeat of the life at conception
bill.
Yeah, life at
Mississippi.
And you know what really pisses me off about that? And I'm gonna read you a statistic that I have on my Mississippi. Let's see. Now, in the state of Mississippi, Black women or Black people make up 37.2% of the population. Now, women, you can basically cut that in half. So 37.2 divided by 2 is roughly 13%, just roughly somewhere around there, 13%. Okay, so you have 13% of the population in Mississippi is African American women or black women. I hate political correctness, by the way. They make up 78% of the abortions in Mississippi. I'm looking at the statistics right in front of me. 13%. Yes. Folks, let me repeat that again. 13% of the population in Mississippi are black women. They make up 78% of the population, or the abortion rate, I should say.
Wow.
If that does not enrage you, I don't care what race you are. If you call yourself pro-life and you don't look at that and that does not anger you, nothing will.
Well, one of the things that I saw that was very telling to me was the fact that there were several groups which were lesbian and gay forums that went down there to help with this campaign against
the bill.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The bill, which was kind of confusing, but because why would a gay, lesbian and gay person have anything to do with abortion? Because they can't procreate anyway.
Right. Hey,
so
hold on just a second. I'm going to bring in another person to the round table real quick. Hey, 2020 Radio, my buddy Dave, what's up?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good.
Good.
So, Dave, before you make your point, because I saw what you had put, and I want you to speak to that in a second, but I'm going to let ex-hyphenated American finish his point there, and then you jump in, all right?
Yeah, that's no problem.
I'm done.
Okay. Well, Dave, he has an awesome radio show, too, Stay Mad Radio on the 2020 Radio Network, so you should check. Folks, check that out when you get a chance, and Dave, make sure you post your link to the show in the chat room. But, Dave, you have mentioned, talk about the Native Americans, and...
Sure. My sister, a year or so ago, drove across country with her husband and her 10-year-old boy. And when she came back, she actually helped me with proofreading by book. And I have a lot in my book about socialism and things like that. And she said, Dave, I got to tell you, when it comes to, you know, government control of a population in the form of socialism, all you have to do is look at the Indian reservations.
That's a good
and
point
the grind,
as well.
The grinding poverty that they have come down to is embarrassing. I mean, there is no need for it, but since the government promised that they would provide things for them, well, you know, things it's never been refreshed. You know how when you on your computer your page gets stale, sometimes you need to refresh it. Well, that's
right.
You know, you can plug that philosophy in most things in life. You know, if you have a business and you don't refresh it, it's going to get stale. Well, these concepts for socialism and for, you know, apologizing or whatever to the Native Americans is stale, and they are the ones paying the price for it because they don't have any place else to go. They don't really have anything that they can, you know, that they can do. I mean, they got the casino thing going, which is, you know, which is great for some of them and making millionaires out of, you know, a few of them. But there are still, you know, many, many people that live on Indian reservations in absolute grinding poverty, and that's how it was described to me. And you know, it was something, you know, I admit I had never thought of it. And so when people talk about, I mean, I'm not going to refute the ex-hyphenated American's point of the black community in America being the grand experiment on socialism. I'm not going to refute that at all, because that is probably from the reservations. That's the next experiment that's where it's going to end up. So if you want to see the arc, okay, you look at where people who are not on government assistance to people who are on government assistance,
right,
to people who are on government dependence. I mean, there's the arc.
Right.
Tesla taught me how to make arcs out of things. So you see where it's going to go.
Right, exactly.
It's going to go to the Indian reservation model.
Right. Hey, let me switch subjects for a minute. I'm going to post something in the chat room, and then I'm going to read this real quick. This is going to crack y'all up. As if it's our fault. Dianne Feinstein uses Fast and Furious to make case for national gun registration. Excuse me, you two-bit old hag. Your government screwed up, and now you're trying to put that on the American people?
That is an excellent point. That was the plan from the start.
That makes no sense to me. These guns were taken away from criminals, okay, then put back in the hands of criminals by the current administration in order to try and track down criminals, and she wants to... What now?
She wants to make non-criminals have to register their guns.
Dude, she's smoking camel poop, man.
Well, here's the thing, Thomas. As near as I can tell, this was their end game. And what was supposed to happen was there was supposed to be an outcry from the American people for gun control. Because Mexican guns, you know, American guns are getting into Mexico, and look at all the violence they're causing. We need to control the guns and that. So then they could come up with this. Well, they're just not waiting for the outcry from American peoples, because they got caught, and it didn't work the way they wanted it to. And she's just trying to push forward, which is a typical tactic.
You think that the guns being not tracked was intentional then?
No, I think they intended to track them, but what they couldn't control is where and when they lost track of them. What I think it was designed to do was to create, quote unquote, create a crisis that could be exploited and in favor of gun control, kind of like, there, you see, we need to control our guns. And then they come out with this. So they're just pushing ahead with it without the, there you see, it's, well, you know, we got caught. This article, Thomas, to me is the equivalent of a non sequitur. You know, it's like the New England Patriots are winning. I think I'll have a hamburger. Those two things don't go together. There's nothing that ties those two statements together. So if you say it in the same sentence, it's a non sequitur.
Right.
This article is the embodiment of a non sequitur. Fast and Furious, yeah, we had our troubles with it. We got caught, you know, and it was our fault. There's a breakdown. But we're now going to control guns because of it.
Right.
It's not something that makes any sense. You're absolutely right. I think your instinct on this, Thomas, is right on for sure.
I just that just stunned me, and ironically it came across my tweet deck that was popping up. So
your new tweet deck that somebody turned you on to today?
Yeah, that one, the new tweet deck. But you know what? I'm looking forward to stirring up some ruckus in this next campaign, or should I say turmoil, because I'm going to get out and I'm going to knock on doors and I'm going to try to get people to vote for the conservatives, you know, because if we get another, 4 years of BO, body odor, you stick a fork in us because chances are we might be done. But I don't believe that.
Well, the thing that I'm looking at with this whole aversionary tactic that they're using with Herman Cain, I truly believe that if it wasn't Herman Cain, it was going to be Mitt Romney. Whoever was in the lead, they're going to take a pot shot at it. But I think what's happening with that is backfiring.
Every time,
if you want to see true racism, all you have to do is look at what happens when a conservative black man runs for a high-level office. When a conservative black man runs for a high-level office, they will do everything that they can to tear him down, okay?
Right.
Even if a conservative black man is even trying to be appointed. Look at Clarence Thomas. Look at Alan Keyes. Now you've got Herman Cain. Alan West, they tried to destroy him, man. Even down here in South Carolina, a guy by the name of Tim Scott. You go back a little bit further, J.C. Watts. Conservative, they tried to destroy these guys because they would not walk lockstep or get back on the plantation, as you say.
Well, think about this, too, and I think I made this point on G. Ski's show last night with regards to Herman Cain. The first allegation came out was rather soft, and it was kind of easily, you know, it was put out there to throw him off his game, to throw him out of the race, to create doubt with him. It wasn't anything specific. It was an anonymous person with an anonymous sources and this and that. Cain says, no, it's not true. I'm still in a race, and he gained ground. And they sit there stroking their chin, and they say, well, that should have worked. Well, then they came out with the next one, which was this Bialik person, and there's a face to it, a real person, not anonymous. Specific specific details, not vague hand gestures type of thing. You know, so in other words, it stepped up another notch. And now, and now that doesn't work, well, they got another one. Well, now they're trying to build a pattern. The thing is, there's nothing founded on any of those, really. And now they're saying to themselves, that should have worked. Now, how much do you want to bet the next big thing to come out is going to be an allegation of rape, actual physical rape?
Well, you know what? If that happens, and I just posted another article, she was actually, Sharon Bialik, she was actually fired from the NRA for false allegations of sexual harassment. That's why they fired her.
Right. Well, I mean, that's just my thinking, because each thing against Herman Cain has been stepped up. In other words, why didn't they come out with the heavy hitters first? Because they didn't have them. Because they didn't think they needed them. This is the whole, if they bring a knife, you bring a gun thing. This is what that is. And each attack is going to be stepped up and stepped up and stepped up. And hopefully they're going to end up with their pants around their ankles, you know, saying, oh, that should have worked.
Right. And you know what? I just got another TweetDeck tweet that since October 1st, Herman Cain, grassroots level, raised $9 million.
Mm-hmm.
1% in the last week. So do they not realize what they're doing?
Yeah, they're helping him.
They are helping him. and here's the thing. I'm going to tell you something. You're going to see some combination of Cain, Gingrich, Cain, there's going to be that combination there. And people are starting to fear that.
Oh, yeah.
I am starting, telling
you. Starting.
Well, not starting. They do. They fear that. And even last night, if you noticed in the debate, there were no shots really taken at each other. Even when Rick Perry stumbled over his words, there really was no pot shots taken.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it should have been from the beginning. That's the way it should have been from the beginning. And now you look at all these so-called polls and these procrastinators or pronosticators. I call them procrastinators. you guys know what I'm trying to say. That big long word that the definition of. Yeah, that's the word.
All right.
That word means that they're expert in something, and they're all experts in nothing. But anyway. They're saying that Mitt Romney is now head-to-head with Barack Obama in the swing states. Well, are they ignoring the grassroots opposition to Mitt Romney that's swelling up, that's starting to bubble up? Are they ignoring that, Dave, ex-American hyphenated?
Yeah. Talk to me. Yeah, no, they're ignoring it. I mean... That's all you get from me. Answer yes.
So, ex-American, I got a question for you, because I have a feeling, like me, you're also a conservative who happens to be black. Were you one time a liberal, or have you always been conservative?
Oh, maybe he stepped away.
Let's see. Did I lose him? Ex-American, are you there? Oh, he probably stepped away from the phone. I will catch him when he gets back. But, you know, I think, now, Dave, you heard about that $15,000 lie detector test software that they used on Herman Cain, right?
No.
After he gave his press conference, I had a Rick Perry moment there for a minute. After he gave his press conference, and then the tape of the transcript from his press conference was sent to a private investigator who had this $15,000 software on his computer. And it analyzes people's voice to find out if they are lying or not.
Mm-hmm.
It has a 95% success rate. How do you think Herman Cain did?
Aces.
He passed it with flying colors. They also analyzed... Hold on. They analyzed Sharon Bialik's press conference, too. How do you think she did?
Did she pass it by a lick?
Yeah. Not even close. I didn't
see that. Where do you see that, anyways?
I'll find the link, and I will post it for you. Because I got it through my Facebook. See, now I got TweetDeck. I can... tweet all kinds of tweets to
Isn't the tweet that deck the cat's PJs?
Yep, something like that. I like it.
All right, fair enough.
Oh, I really do like it. Okay, yeah, let me find the article. Hey, ex-American, are you back yet? Okay, and I'm about to post this. Copy. Paste. There you go. That's the YouTube of it right there. Did he? Hey, ex-hyphenated, are you still there? Can't hear him. Maybe you had to. Maybe you had to step away. Dave, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
I'm gonna probably play this clip on my show tonight, there, Thomas.
Oh, that'll be fine. That'll be cool. But I just wanted to take a time out for that, you know, for the craziness that is America. But back on topic, the whole issue of eugenics, abortion, folks, for those who came in late, I started my show talking about the abortion issue and the eugenics, the sterilization of women, black women, people that were considered morons and imbeciles and all that stuff. Now, I read some articles, and I think I'm going to post this one so you can read it for yourself. But, guys, let me tell you something. A practice as inherently racist as the abortion should not get any other airplay for anything except what it is. Margaret Sanger's sole purpose, first with eugenics and then with abortion, was to eradicate the black population. Folks, you gotta understand that. That's not just a social issue. And it really irritates me how both sides will just write things off. Oh, it's just a social issue. That's the death clock ticking on an entire population of people. Do you all not understand that? But yet we try to separate social issues from fiscal issues. Folks, there's no separation. Let me show you how it's not possible for it to be separated. You have a woman that gets an abortion, and as a result of that abortion, one of the side effects, it destroys her emotionally. She has to seek psychological counseling. She doesn't have the money to pay for it. But somebody has to pay for it. Therefore, health care costs are driven up. Yes, I'm making a connection that you don't hear, but it's just as real and viable as every other reasoning for the rise in healthcare costs. There are a lot of women who have to seek the emotional help because it's not provided to her after she gets that abortion. But yet, we want to say we shouldn't focus on fiscal issues or social issues, just fiscal conservative issues. If you really want to destroy the legacy of someone or something, people in all walks of the pro-life movement need to start talking about abortion for what it really is. I don't care if you're not black. I don't care what race you are. If you call yourself pro-life, you better get real and know what Margaret Sanger is doing. And it wasn't just black people. There were a few Native American. There were a whole lot of people who were mentally handicapped, who were sterilized because they were considered undesirable. I repeat my assertion. Abortion is the most inherently racist act. In the history of this country. The act of abortion makes slavery seem like a walk in the park, and we know it wasn't. We know it wasn't. We know it wasn't. To be truly conservative, to be truly conservative is to stand up for everything that is right morally. Everything. I want you guys to hear a song. This song is my new show song. And listen closely to the words.
Looks just like me, too afraid. destination. You can feel it. Don't you know you're almost there?
Conservative Christians Unleashed on Blog Talk Radio, and I want to thank everybody for coming. And before I play one more song, I want to acknowledge everybody in the chat room. 2020 Radio Network, which is my buddy Dave, Antoinette from Delaware, who's a sweetheart, ex-hyphenated American, awesome conversation, and great, great guy who I just called into my show, Exposing Demons, and Patriot Greg, a man who knows what it is like to have lived under oppression. All good people, all great people. Now I want to explain my comment, what I just said there. I don't blame women who get abortions. I take it back to the roots of the whole institution of eugenics. It's inherently racist. And when you feed the thoughts into a girl's head, oh, my life is over, this, that, and the other, and there's no other alternative, she's going to take the road easiest travel. Yes, she is very responsible. Yes, he ultimately makes that choice. But I take it back to the root. Take it back to the root. I take it back to the roots. I care about women. I care about what happens to them. And I also think abstinence needs to become a more available teaching in schools. But for that to happen, we got to kick socialism out of our country once and for all. I got another song. And then we're coming down to the end of our show. I'm going to play this song. Because like I said, this song is dedicated to hurting women. And they need to know that there is hope. Also want to thank everybody for coming to the show today. I appreciate y'all. God bless you and I love y'all.
My tears and dry them with my hair. My head, you are there. The night is
Greg, I can't blame an institution. You are my friend. And just like I can't argue with you about what you experienced under communism, you cannot argue with me about abortion, because it has inherently affected me quite possibly more than it's affected you. I ask you out of mutual respect. I'm not saying that women are not responsible. That's not what I'm saying. But Greg, if you don't know the root of something, you can't make a blanket statement without categorically having the entire facts. I'm asking you as a matter of respect. I was surgically sterilized at the age of 6 months old as a baby because I was considered an imbecile or an undesirable. I will never get to have a family. Please, I'm asking you, don't argue with me about this one. I know women are responsible. But if you want to put it like that, let me ask you this. Was I responsible as a six-month-old baby when I was snatched away by the state and surgically sterilized against my mom's will? I'm not upset with you. I just want to just ask you, don't argue with me on that one, because it is a very painful subject for me. Yeah, I'm a guy, but I hate abortion. And I've seen the entirety of what it's like. Guys, thank you all for coming. I love you all to pieces. God bless you. And Greg, you continue to come to my show because you are a very wise man. You and I value your input. And you know what you're talking about. So you make sure, you know, sometimes we disagree. But you all have an awesome day. God bless, and you take care.